One of the things we always want to make sure we do before we go into the hut is clean our shoes on the brushes outside. That's so we don't drag in all the scoria and snow and ice that we pick up on our boots when we walk around the site or across from camp. So let's go inside the hut. I've actually really got to stoop down to get in this doorway. I'm not that tall myself at 5'5", but these guys really apparently average height was about 5'3", so quite a bit shorter than today's generations. So here we go. Here I am inside Scott's Terra Nova hut with Al Fastier, Antarctic Heritage Trust's Program Manager for Conservation. Al, I'm so excited to hear some of the stories, both of those early expeditions, but also all of the conservation work that you've done. Because honestly, when you walk in here, it is as if the men just left. You really can't see what's happened. We were talking the other day about somebody asked, were the huts just frozen in time? And that's the impression that you kind of get. I think David Attenborough talked about them as a time warp without parallel. Actually, there's been hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of work on these huts to make them look this way. So the conservation of this hut, when did that actually start?
So for the artifact side of the project, the program ran for 12 months of the year. So we did the summer season, took approximately 1,500 artifacts back each summer. And that's when the artifact conservators, the winter team, worked out of Scott Base conserving the artifacts there.
One of the things I've been really impressed about is just how authentic everything seems. And I know that you have quite strict practice in terms of the applied science of conservation with how you'll treat something, how much new material you might add. Will you give us a little bit of an sort of oversight of what are some of those practices that you work within?
For any conservation project we've been involved in, is the first part is to actually do a building survey and an artifact survey, and we get an appreciation of what needs to be done. And before we start any work at all, other than emergency repairs, we're required to write a conservation plan, and that says what we're going to do. And it has different guidelines and policies within the document, and that's been peer-reviewed internationally. And that gives us the guidelines of how we're going to conserve the hut. So it's not conservation according to me. There's some very set details. As we walked in, you can feel that the microclimate within the building is very dry. And you feel sort of a bit of a spring in the floor. The building feels very, very healthy in my eyes. But back in 2004 and 5, summer season, it was in very poor condition. So the building felt very damp. It was very cold. And there's ice crystals up on the roof and in the corners on the south corner. So before we did any artifact conservation treatments, it was important to improve the microclimate in the building. Otherwise, we'd spend a lot of time conserving the artifacts, put them back into a building in a poor condition, and the metals would start corroding again and the rest. So there's a big job ahead of us. We knew that there's a layer of ice under the floor. And so we had to make a decision, were we going to lift the floor to remove the ice, and we knew that that would be a massive job because it involved lifting this very fragile lino. And so we came up with the idea of making this large lino roll, and we knew the larger the diameter, the less damage we'd do to the lino to roll it up. So we couldn't bring the lino roll through the door to the hut, so we actually had to construct it within the building. It stood probably 2 meters high, and we constructed it, and then we had to slowly roll the lino onto it. So first of all, we had to pull out every tack in the lino, and then with two heat guns, we slowly heated the lino up and then started the roll. And it took us several days to roll the lino onto this big roller.
And just quickly, Al, what had happened to all the artifacts at this stage? Did you have to move them out or to one side? Because there's 11,000 of them in here.
Yep.
I imagine you had to think carefully about what happened to them.
So the first thing we had to do was actually record where the artifacts were, and each artifact was given an individual number. And then at that point, we could move them because we knew we could return them back to the original location. There are a few challenges. One was a wardroom table, and you can see that's about just over a metre across by probably about 5 metres long. What do you do with that? We couldn't get it out of the door. So what we did is we wrapped it in protective blankets and actually raised it up into the roof cavity and stored it up there.
So that's really innovative. And the wardroom table is, of course, in all those classic images of Scott and his men having their midwinter's dinner, was such a central part to the hut. You certainly wouldn't want to damage it.
You're 100% correct. It's one of the most iconic artefacts in the building, and probably sort of the heart and soul of the building. This is where the officers and the scientists would spend a lot of their time eating and discussing their expeditions and their science.
So we've sorted out what happened to the artefacts. The wardroom table is safely tucked up in its spot in the ceiling. So the lino is coming up very, very slowly. And then what was it that you discovered under the floorboards?
Well, each board was individually numbered, but then we found... We had some ruberoid.
What's ruberoid?
It's kind of like a layer of building felt. So we had to roll that up. So it was a second lot of rolling. And then we, under that, there was a second layer of floorboards. So once again, we lifted those and everything had to be marked out so we could put it back in the identical location. And then we found ice, so just solid ice. So that not only did the water flow over the floor of the hut, it actually had flown under the building and had frozen solid. Because of the bunks or the tenements you can see here and all the artifacts, we didn't want to move everything out of the building, so we decided to retain those. So we only lifted the centre third of the floor. And that centre third was really easy to get the ice out, so we just came in a good old-fashioned way, put down some protective plywood, rolled in with a wheelbarrow, and actually chipped the ice out. And it only took about 2 days to get that ice out, so it was quite simple. But the problem was the ice under the floor on either side of the hut. So we still had one third on the northern side and one third on the southern side to remove.
And how long did that take?
We designed a heat exchange unit. So we had a glycol boiler and we heated up the glycol. We went through a heat exchange unit and we had several fans and we could blow the hot air under the sides of the building to melt it. And we had read some scientific papers and calculated how long it would take to melt the ice, and we came up with a figure of about 2 weeks, and that was about right. But the problem was we had limited time. Antarctica, New Zealand told us we had to fly back to New Zealand a week earlier, so we ended up moving on to a 24-hour program, and so we had two teams running to keep the ice melting going, and it was a long, hard effort.
Yeah, I can imagine how challenging that would be, working around the clock. And so with the ice successfully excavated, it was time to put down the floorboards again. And I understand that you even went so far as to put all the nails back in the exact hole they came out of. And tell me about rolling the lino out again. Did that go to plan?
Well, we thought it was going to plan, and we rolled out two runs of the lino, and we were pretty proud of the work that we had done. And we thought, you know, this is impossible doing what we've done. And we're achieving it. So we wouldn't say cocky, but we're pretty proud of the work we did. And then on the last roll, we rolled it out, and we found that length of lino had shrunk, and it had shrunk by about 3 inches. And then we thought, how do we resolve that problem? So now we have all these witness marks on the lino, so there's some historic cuts, and they weren't lining up. So then, using good old Kiwi ingenuity, we came up with the idea of putting sort of like a turfer, which is a small winch, clamping the lino, and then each day stretching it by another 1 or 2 millimetres. And slowly we stretched it back into position, put the brass tacks back in, and got it perfect. So I always tell people, you know, if they had to lift lino in their own kitchen or bathroom and put it back down, modern stuff, they'd be challenged, let alone this very fragile, brittle lino within the hut that we successfully relayed.